Okay, today is the 2nd of August. It's
2nd of August,
Monday, the 2nd of August. What number at Dixon Road?
Two.
2 Dixon Road, Denham Court. This is the Pioneers of the Fringe project.
What's your full name?
Mile Petkovic.
And your date of birth?
11 September 1933.
And your place of birth?
Place in Blato. They call the Croatia now, like country.
Your parents' names?
Anton Petkovic, my father, and Juva Petkovic, my mother.
So do you know your father's date of birth and your mother's date of birth?
I know my father, date of birth, years, yes, I know, but not a date. I know the month, but not a date.
Okay, so your father's date of birth that you know.
22 October 1885. My mother, I think she's in April, but I don't remember exact date. And 1892.
What are your some first memories of Blato as a young boy?
First memory is when the Italian occupation came in 1941. Well, I remember quite well. Then from them, I can tell, you know, quite a bit what I remember after my, you know, continued life.
How old were you at 41, 1941?
I was 8 years old.
Had you been to school before then?
Yes. I started under the King of Yugoslavia, I started school at 6 years old. Then I went 4 years till to war start, when the Italy comes, Italian occupation, they break down, then no school. Then I went to Korčula, city of my island. I went to special school, but they learned most of Italian. That was only for a short time, about 3 months. Then start really get war serious, and they closed the school and send us home. That was 1942.
So what did it mean, the Italian occupation? How did that impact your life?
Well, what I remember, it was quite a bit, you know, hard for all the people, because when the war break up in 1939, like Germany invaded Poland and all that, then Italy come in it, and Italy come to the Dalmatian coast, like a Croatian state of Croatia. Italy came, Mussolini came, and they occupied it. And they was there till the partisans and allies. They, you know, they start push them around. Then Italy, Mussolini, he decided to give it up, and he capital, you know, they finished with the join Germans, and that partisans, like that was an army of the allies in Yugoslavia with the leader of Tito, Marshal Tito. And they stayed there to the all the way to the end of the, you know, war. But Germans come in a couple of times. They fight and they pushed the partisans and the allies, like with the help of the English and the Americans, with help with them, they pushed the Germans away back inside the, you know, Europe. And from then, they after 45, the war finished, and that was like a socialist party of under the Masha Tita till to 1991. So then, like, civil war break up, 1901. But I come back before that, 1952, when I finished the school. It wasn't much work around, because after the war, all, you know, Yugoslavia was all burned down and all, you know, very bad, no work, and we couldn't, because I was one of the, you know, bigger family, in my family.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Four brothers and four sisters.
And where were you?
I'm a younger one, I'm a baby in the family.
The youngest of nine.
Yes, and my sister is older. She's born 1915.
That's the oldest.
She's still alive in Argentina. She's 96 years of age.
And that's the eldest, yes, sister.
That's the oldest.
What's her name?
Yagoda.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a suvaya. He was suvaya. He studied for, you know, for a long time and outside the, you know, home in Vienna and Dubrovnik and all that cities, still to his father died. Then he had to come home to, you know, take in charge of the family, because he was older in the family.
So you left school, and there wasn't... What did you do after you left school?
When I left the school, my father had a little workshop, like joinery and all that, and I was younger. My brothers, they had a big, you know, winery and all that, but they were older than me, so they was working, and I was schoolboy. And when I finished the school, I couldn't get much any other work, and I didn't like to go on the farm, work on the farm, wineries. And then we had a group of friends, and we talked together, and we decided to cross the border. So we took the little boat, 4 meters long, and six of us, and we tried to get across the border on the Adriatic Sea, and we got caught, and I finished in the jail.
So why did you decide to leave? Because there was no hope, or...?
Oh, it is was hope, but... you know, when you're young, you don't think serious. And I was just finished school, full of life. Everybody was talking about America and this and that. And that time was very poor over there. And shows on the pitches, you go in the pitches and shows, you know, advertising, you know, that's Western countries and all that. And that was a bit of it, you know, incited, and most of it economic.
Yes.
Yeah, economic, that's all.
So you crossed the Adriatic Sea. What was the, when you said you crossed the border? So the
we didn't cross the border. We got caught.
Water.
We got caught, and we was in jail. They sent us to put us in jail. And when the time,
why weren't you allowed to sail? Why did you get caught? Because Italy was controlling the country.
No. Italy didn't control the country. No. War was finished.
War was finished.
A social party in Yugoslavia controlled the country. He was in charge of Marshal Tito. That was 1952, 7 years after war finished. And as I said, we got all young, six of us, when we finished the school, and we was friends, and we talk about, you know, we got together, and we decided to take that, you know, risk and cross the border, but we didn't get lucky, and we got caught with the patrol boat, you know, army patrol boat, and we finished in the jail, and when the time come, I was 2 years in the jail, and then they let me out.
What was jail like? What jail was it?
It was Lepoglava. There was the biggest jail in Yugoslavia. One is the biggest in Europe. They're well known as a,
Who was in jail? What sort of people were in jail?
All sorts of people.
Yeah.
All everybody. Politics, economic, for stealing.
Murderers.
Everybody. Most of the politicians, because after the war, you know, a lot of people finished in the jail because of the politics, because of war, and they got, working with they support, fascists and all that. They finished.
What did they feed you in jail? What was the daily life like? What did you do?
I was working in jail. I finished, in the jail, I finished my trade. Yeah, I finished my trade like Cooper.
And your trade was? Is?
Cooper. You know, make barrels and all that, you know. And when I come out, when they let me go in the army, I didn't like the idea because everybody talks about army, who was in the army, how hard it is. And I didn't work, I didn't have a, you know, very hard life till today. And because we was living pretty, you know, pretty good compared to other people, my family. But I didn't have a very hard time of being hungry or things like that. That's why I've been, you know, a bit shaky, and I didn't like to take those sort of a life that hard, you know, that young. And then instead of going to army, I take the chance and run away again. We crossed, five of us, we crossed the border. That time we got lucky and we crossed the border and finished in Italy. We had a hard time because we had a bad weather and we didn't have any food, any water. And we had a bad time across the border. Instead, you know, makes 85 miles. We went maybe 150 miles, and take us on a roving boat, little roving boat, take us nearly 4 days. No water, no food. Food, we didn't worry about, nobody gets hungry, but we was, you know, looking to the water all the time. It was very hot. After bad weather come calm and heat, you know, middle of summer, and we got very hot and we got burned by the salt water, because we was washing with the salt water, and the sun got to us and we got burned, and we finished in Italy about 35 kilometers down and south of Bari. Coast of the Italy, of the Bari, and the ambulance come, police come, and asked us, and they took us in the Bari hospital. We was in the Bari hospital for about, some of us, 25, some one younger one, he was badly then hurt because he fell in the water and he got the voice, you know, damaged. Then he finished in the hospital, serious ill, and he stayed there for 40 days. Then we went to camp. We were waiting there for immigration. I didn't have anybody on outside, you know, my village, anybody in my relation or my family. I didn't have nobody. So at that time it was very hard to immigrate because you need
No papers.
Oh, yeah, we had the papers because Interpol covered us, and we was covered by them, but also you had to have somebody guarantor for you to for your work and stay, you know, place to stay if you want to immigrate. In America, it was quota for 5 to 7 years. You couldn't have, had to wait at least 5 years to get through the Interpol. And in Australia, it was about 3 years. But I had a friend of my family, he was farmer up to Queensland. And he came, he was on holiday that time in Europe. In my place, Blatter, and he, my mother talked to him, and he came to see me in a camp in Italy. Then he talked to me, and he asked me if I want to go in Australia. I said yes.
So how long were you in the camp?
I was in the camp about 3 months. After that, my auntie, Nan, in the room, she sent the driver, and he took me down in Rome, and she was building a big, what they call, for the poor kids, you know.
Orphanage.
Big building to bring the, all those kids without the parents from the Peru, Argentina, because she was in Argentina for many years.
This is the older sister.
That was my auntie.
Okay.
Yeah. She's well known now.
What was her name?
Maria Petkovic.
So she was building an orphanage.
Yeah. And I was there to the. She didn't want me to go in Belgrade. She wants me to stay there, to look after, you know, get married and all that, and look after that. Be in charge of that thing because she had about 25 acres there, land and all you know, agriculture and all that big, you know, place. She wants me to look after that, but I didn't want to stay. I said, I'll go with my friend, I'll go in Australia. I didn't want to go even in Argentina because my sister, as soon as I came in Italy, my sister sent straight away papers and she got the visa and everything to bring me in Argentina. I didn't want to go in Argentina because that time was Argentina, you know, that Peru and all that bad, you know, politics there and revolution. And I didn't want to take those chances. And then I'll wait for another couple of months to immigrate to Australia. And I came in Australia in 1955.
So what did you know about Australia? Did you know anything?
Australia.
Yeah, before you came.
No.
I didn't know nothing.
Nothing in Australia. As I said, I didn't have anybody like my relation, of my family. Nobody in Australia. Nobody anywhere. Just my sister in Argentina. And
how did you feel? That's very hard.
When I came in 1955 on 22 October, and I come in Sydney with the ship, the boat, and I stay in Sydney for a couple of weeks because a lot of my, from my place, a lot of people, like, as you know, a lot of, was the old, you know, immigrate here, and they want, you know, see me, everybody invite me for lunch and this and that. And then after that, I went to that man who guarantee for me, because he guaranteed also for work.
What was his name?
Maurice Andrich.
Any relation?
No. Only my grandfather, he gave me money to go 1922 to go to Australia because he didn't have the money, so he... He gave him, not to give him, he paid him a fare to go in Australia. That's why he didn't forget. That's why he bring me in Australia to, you know, to pay back
your grandfather.
Yeah, but, yeah.
So what boat did you come out on? How did you get here?
Flaminia. Name a boat of Flaminia.
What was the trip like?
Very bad and very long. 37 days to Fremantle. She didn't go further. She stopped in Fremantle because she didn't want to take that Australian bay, you know, that from Fremantle to Melbourne. They reckoned that part of the sea very for small boat, very dangerous.
How many people in the camp were there, roughly?
In the camp? Yeah, in Italy?
Yeah.
About 1,300.
1,300. Where were they from?
Most of it Yugoslavia. Most of Yugoslavia. And quite a few Hungary, Greece, but not very few.
Mainly men?
Men, all men, no women.
Okay, so what was terrible about the boat trip? You were sick?
No, I wasn't sick. I wasn't sick, I'll never have a problem with that. Never been seasick. But a lot of people, women, was, bad weather, small boat, and they all white, 35, 36 days, they were sick as soon as they come on the boat, till they come in the Fremantle. I don't know how they survived, how they didn't die, because they didn't eat. They've been sick from day to day. All, restaurant and all that, most of the time was empty. And more than 1,000 people was on a small boat. Because, they didn't. On a boat was most of it from Austria, those immigrants.
Austria, you're saying.
Austria, yeah. And Hungarian people, Polish, lots of Polish.
How were you feeling by yourself on the boat?
I wasn't by myself. We come about 13 of us, 13, 14 of us from the camp. And together.
So what, you got to...
You know Danny Kunyashik?
Yes.
Yeah, they're on the club.
Dinko,
yeah. He was with me. He ran away with me. He came with me. We was together in Italy. And we come together in Australia.
Is he a good friend of yours?
Oh, yeah.
You must, of course.
Oh, yeah, we're very good friends.
Like brothers.
Like family.
What happened, your family?
Yeah. We've been all of us, very, very good.
Because you were suffering a lot. It was a lot of hardship to leave your families.
If I go back, my father died during the war in 1944.
Right.
And I was 11 years old when he died. Then I, had a bit of a honey because I was the youngest in the family. I didn't feel the, hard time because everybody, petted me. Everybody, I was a baby. My sisters and all that, they didn't let me, go, but they look after me very well. But probably when I grow, bigger and bigger during the school, probably I got spoiled.
That's good.
Yeah. And that's why they call me, spoil all the time in the family and here too.
Okay, so what about your mother? Did you ever see your mother again?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
because of my mother, I went so many times, every time she... said every time she gets flu or something, going to bed, she tell my older brother, because he was over there, with her, and he asked him, tell them, ring Miles, I want to see him before I die. I want to see him straight away.
And you would go?
Every time my brother sent a telegram or whatever, ring or things like that. I told Frances, my wife, to get book the plane on I was been going every time. Three times she was thinking she was going to die. Three times I went over there. And when I come there, she got better. She got better, she got out of bed, and she was nearly 80 years of age. And of course, she was worried about me all the time because I left her, you know, very young. And
you're her baby.
Yeah. And my sister, everybody gets married. I bring the brother here, he's in Liverpool, 1961. And the only one, my brother, older brother, he remained there. And he was looking after her. She had a beautiful wife, and she never had any problem with, you know. She had everything. I sent them money from here, and then she never been, you know, show the money. But she was missing me all the time. And that's why I went so many times over there. First time, when I got married, as soon as I get the first kid, children, this boy, she wants to see him. Then we got another one. We got two boys, and she nearly every week she was asked, "I want to see your boys and your wife before I die." That was, and we went 1969. We took the trip with the cruiser. We went in Argentina to see my sister. We went there. We stayed there in Argentina for 3 months, you know, around those countries, South American countries. Then we went over there, and I intend to stay there for 12 months. But in the meantime, when we got there, and 6 months after, my wife's father, he had to have an operation on gallbladder, and he went to hospital and he didn't make it. So we have to come back. The funeral. We didn't finish the journey. And after that, I was going every 2 or 3 years till I got, you know, sick. After she died, I went again so many times because I still got over there sisters and nephews and nieces, and my brother, he died 1987, I went there at the time. And then I went every couple of years. Every couple of years, till I got really, you know, bad and sick. And 2005, that was last trip I went over there. And 2008, I got really basic and had to finish in the hospital, big operation, and that was it.
So we'll come back to your health later, but let's just go, when you arrived in Fremantle, how did you get to Sydney?
With the boat, Norwegian boat, they called Skagum, because the air boat, it was something wrong with that anyway. Couldn't make it. Couldn't go any further. And we have to embark to another ship. From there to Melbourne. We stay in Melbourne overnight. Then we come back in Sydney.
Where did you live in Sydney?
I live in a friend there on Chatswood.
Chatswood,
yeah. For 2 weeks.
And
then he put me on a plane and we went up to Cairns.
Okay, so you settled in Cairns.
I didn't settle in Cairns. I was doing a contract, cane cutting, 1 year.
Who were you working for in Cairns?
I was working for that man who bring me in Australia, who guaranteed me for work. I have to. I didn't have a choice to go anywhere else. I have to work for him because that was, agreement, that's why he bring me to Australia to work, because
he was like your sponsor.
He was my sponsor, and he had a big sugar farm.
So tell me about the sugar farm and what you thought of cane cutting and how you learned.
Very hard. That was a hard job. When I start doing, it was first of all what? We was burning cane a couple of days before we started to cut it. And we, of course, in the cane, it was all sorts of snakes. And bandicoot, they called, where they feed themselves with the cane. So they eat, they eat till to blow up. When they, when you burn the sugar, when you burn the sugar cane, those animals, they can't run away. They got caught in Thailand and they burned with it. And then start, it was very hot and start smell and wasn't alive. And I said, so many times I said, of course the country and the and first day when I think to leave the my country, because that was very hard. I was young. I never worked very hard. That was first time I really started, work for a living.
How old and were you then at that point?
I was 22 years old.
What was a typical day? You get up early?
You get up 2 o'clock in the morning to beat the sun to load it. Because if you don't do it, molasses of the kind start on the heat, start, run out, and you got your whole, body with a stick, and very uncomfortable. Of course, you can't work because all you fill yourself with that sugar, molasses, and that you have to load it before sun come out. When you do that, you had something to eat. We had six of us, like gang, we call the gang. When we loaded, about 5 o'clock in the morning, we start cutting. And we cut it to about half past 10, 11, because it start very hot. Then we had a break. We go in a shed, like in a bag, have a drink, or have a little bit of refresh, wash and all that. Have something to eat, if you can, because it was very hot. Most of it we're drinking. And then fruit. Papa, I didn't like that. I tried the mango. I didn't like it, but Papa, I did. And Papa saved me, to keep going. Because I was couldn't eat the meat or things like that, because it was very hot. You fill yourself with the water all the time. So you got no appetite to eat anything else. And then you go back about 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 9 o'clock in the afternoon. Long days. And that I was doing for 6 months. And I said, I cut the last stick from stand up. When I finished, I never touched it again. Then I bought it, I made money, I bought a car of the owner because he couldn't drive anymore. So he had an imported car from America and he never drove it much. And I bought it for him, £800. £800 was a lot of money. I could buy the 2 or 3 houses in Liverpool that 55, 56. And I come with the car down. After exactly 1 year, I spent only 1 year in Queensland. And I drive from the Cairns all the way down to Liverpool. And I come there, I had a friend.
Anything on the trip that stood out to you coming?
I took the wrong, I come down with a friend of mine. But we didn't, waste any time. We didn't stop anyway. Just in the car for a couple of hours, have a sleep in a couple of hours in the car, fill the, petrol, and I must have turned in Innisfail. after Venezuela, I missed a turn and I went to took the wrong road and done about 150 miles. Then I have to come back and run out the track. I thought it's a shorter way, but we had to come back. Then from there, all the way to Liverpool.
So,
and I come to Liverpool 1956.
And you met your wife?
Not straight away. I come down in you know, Kookaburra Road. Used to be Kookaburra Road. I don't know what they call now. A friend of mine was living there, and there was far enough from my village, you know. As a matter of fact, it was my next door neighbours.
Who? What was their name?
Tulich. You know Maurice Tulich? He had their old villages and all that, Maurice?
Yes, of course I know Maurice.
He's their grandfather and grandmother.
Maurice helps me do this work. He helps pay for me to do this work.
Yeah, I was, you know, living there for 6 months.
So you lived at Preston's with the Tulich family?
Yeah.
With Peter and John, or...?
No, we had the, you know, old house, old Maurice's grandfather. He had the old house, little old house up to up top the hill. Then he built the new one there on a road, near the road, like Kookaburra Road, and he rent. That we paid the board, three of us, we was there.
How much did you pay rent in those days?
I think it was... 1 pound something.
What did the landscape look like then? What did Kookaburra Road look like? Was it all tomato farms or?
Oh, yeah. All tomatoes farms.
Just all farming?
All farming. No houses there at all. Only houses, you know, and farm. One there. Every farm had one.
How did you meet? Oh, so they were your neighbours in Blato?
It was my neighbours in Blato, yeah. Very good neighbours, very good friends. Like Maurice, special grandmother. The Tajuwa, so they call. She was very good friends with my mother because they was neighbors. They was drinking coffee together. They was talking, you know, every day and things like that. Till that one went in Australia. She went to Australia in 1934.
Is that why you came to Liverpool?
That's all right. Yeah. Now, reason was when I came to Liverpool, you know, Pudaric,
yes.
Ivan.
Yes.
Yeah, we was friends back home, and he was doing a bit of a carpentering here. When I come in Australia, we met. We was talking and we met. I said, I have to go in Queensland, and when I, you know, finish my you know, contract and all that, I'll come back, because he told me, he said, you wouldn't like it. He said, I'll never be there, but he says, whoever been there, never go back. Hard work and hot and all that. So he didn't tell me lies, and I'll find out, and I come back. And when I come back, I come 1 month or 26 October. And I couldn't find a work. Ivan didn't worker, he was working on the tomato because it wasn't much work on those days, especially on building. Then I went because I learned driving truck on a farm in Queensland. That's why I got the license, truck license. And they was advertising for truck drivers carrier, vegetable carrier to go take on the market, collect the tomatoes and all that on the farms, and they called themselves Gergic. On the Bringelli Road, the opposite, you know, that almost need the, what they call that, rebels, or it?
Oh, yes.
It failed, that Brighe has big shade.
What was it called? The family, was it?
Gergic. It's Yugoslav.
Are they still
family.
Around?
Oh, yeah. They had the Belvedere.
And he was the carrier?
He was carrier, the two brothers and the father. And they had their five trucks and they're big, you know. And I went there, and he said yes. He said, then I was collecting tomatoes, all sorts of vegetables, you know, to take in the market.
So what would you do? You'd go and you would know many of the families then.
No, he told me, he went with me, one of the brother, he went with me one day, and he showed me where's the old, you know,
So tell me
places.
About how big the area was. So where would you go? What was your route?
Most of it, you know, from like Bringelly Road, that way, Ostro, Kames Creek, and West Houston Park and all that. Most of it, few Italians and most of it Yugoslav family.
How much would you collect?
Well, from 5 to 7 up to 900 cases, small cases. 3 by 5 by 3, what they call, you know, so not the big tomato case, only those like that, and used to be small cases, those. Used to depends how many, you know, they farm, how many they got. Some of them, they got more and less, and some of them tell you, they telling ring and says, I got for Saturday afternoon, I got 50 cases, then you go there, you got 75 or 80. Some of them, they got less. That's why you can't leave that. You have to pick that all, take it all, and sometimes you got too many on the track.
So you would, who were some of the people, some of the farmers, some of their names?
Oh, that was Bulyumbashich.
And where were they located, if you can remember?
West Houston, over there. Well, we got...
You would have had Tulich's.
Oh, yeah, Tulich's, yeah. We got in Edmondson Avenue, those avenues, you know.
8, 9
and all that.
Numbers, yeah.
They're all like, not growing anymore. But Ilitches, then Petsatich.
It's okay if you can't remember. Sure,
few. Yeah, it's a long time, I can't remember.
That's right, 900 cases, it's a lot of fruit, vegetable.
We used to do the two, sometimes three trips.
So that's tomatoes, what else?
Capsicum, carrots, beans, everything, whatever you had. Lettuce and whatever they grow on the farm, all taken.
And which route would you go into the market? Where would you drive up the Hume Highway?
Hume Highway, yeah. Oh, Hume. That's only one way to get that those days.
So when you got to the market, what happened?
We had to unload it on the benches, you know, where you told, and you have to unload it there. Then you go back and do it again. I done it only one season. Then beginning of February, get some work start, you know. We got some work, and me and Ivan, we teamed together, and we was working as a team together for 2 years.
Then
complete 1960, complete building, and complete stopped. 1960. Then 62, Menzies opened a bank, you know, to loan, you could get the loan for the housing. Then working, start get work, more work. And never looked back. After that, right, 62, had work, you know, all the time.
So let's talk about how you built some of the housing estates.
First of all, we was working for Mahler Home. That's what they called it. Mahler Home was before the Housing Commission. what they call Heads Commission, Green Valley, Madrid, what we work in, Horsbury, Casella, all those places when the what we call the Heads Commission projects.
What did you say? They were called Malin. What sort of homes did you say? Was it a
Mala home? Mala home. That was like a Heads Commission, but they called it, you know, both service homes, Mala homes, that they called. They didn't have any only one type of the Heads. Most of it we built the Campbelltown area over there. That was for army people. Like after they called the war service homes. That time, as I said, I go back to that time, Ivan didn't have any job. He went to back to the farm and grow tomatoes, and he put a couple of shares and put the, you know, chooks. And I continue to build in a building game. Then I formed with the, one of the my countrymen, we formed a company, and we went up in full contract, you know.
So what was your company called?
Condor. Condor Company. Building company.
How do you spell that? C-O-N-D-O-L. Condor.
Condor. You know, boy, that was a long time ago. I can't remember why we picked it that night.
So tell me about, I'm interested in talking about where the Green Valley.
Then
what happened? What did it look like with the council? Like, how did it start up for you? Where did you build there?
1963, I built the medical center in Green Valley. You know medical center in Green Valley?
Miller, yes.
Yeah, I built that. 1963. Then I had a partner. My partner disappeared. Nobody could find him. And he took the money from the bank. Building was, we had a couple of houses on. We owned and medical center. And was halfway finished, medical center, when he disappeared. Then I had a lot of bills to pay to creditors, and I had to finish, and otherwise they bankrupt me. they said to me they're going to take their hairs. They're going to take your hairs of me. Then I didn't call myself bankrupt. I finished that. I borrowed the money of the bank on my hairs, and I finished the building. Medical center, I paid the creditors, and then I, stopped. I didn't contract it anymore. Then we team up again with the Ivan. We went to work on the Green Valley on a housing commission. Green Valley. Then we started there. We was there for a short while. Then Mandruid opened up 1964. Full blast, Mandru was, thousands and thousands of homes. They came, when they started in the building there, a lot of work. We was working for Moss Building Company. And I was there together for quite a while. And I couldn't take it anymore. He said, no. He said, I'm finished. He said, it's too hard for me. He says, I'm not going to. I killed myself for a few extra dollars. He says, I'm not going to do it anymore. You have to find somebody else, because you can't do it by yourself. Then my brother came with me. And I was working there till 1969. Then I went, for 12 months I went over there in Europe. When I come back, I still got the job. after 12 months, and I continue. Then I come back, and we had a team, four of us, big team.
Who was that team? The names? Do you remember?
Two brothers Petkoviches, Anton and Mick, and one of the Anton Petkovich brother-in-law.
So what did you actually do? They were all prefabricated houses.
No. Tell me, describe. We had to, all was hardwood. We had to, all was pre-cut, but we had to put together. We had to nail it together, all hardwood. And that was right up to the 71.
So that was all manual hammering in nails?
Yeah. And it wasn't any, I was the one first aboard the generator. To make, you know, to do the on the pair, so on the, because we wasn't any pair on the job. Only was first new development and no electricity, no pair on the job. Some of them not even water, wasn't any water. And I find it very hard to, you know, do by the hand those hardwood. Then I buy the generator and the pair saw and was doing. But that generator, I bought it, everybody wants to, you know. Got the, you know, rafters around the hairs when you have to put the fascia on. Had to, you know, to do by the hand, take your hairs. And they used to come and borrow it, you know, generator, and they burn it. Generator burns, and so after that, I finished with it. With that hard work, I went private. Private on Jennings Company. I started there 72 in Jennings, and I was doing that, all was prefab, all softwood, trusses and everything, you know, quick, easy. And then I done that. To 81, nearly 10 years. Then I start doing by myself. Buy the block of land, build the house, and do the, build the project there on Ingeborg townhouses. Till to I retired. I retired not because I didn't need the money. Really, I didn't need it, but I liked the work, my work, but I couldn't do any more because I was very, you know, ill.
What was the sickness?
Back. I couldn't do any more with my back. When I finished the project on Ingeborg, was my middle son, he finished the apprenticeship with me and was working with me. He was working with me. He went to Miller, on a tech Miller, Green Valley. And he was working with me when I was doing that project, and I bought another couple of block of land, couple of old houses to do the, you know, as soon as I finish this, I'll do the development and do the other ones. But he told me one day, he said, "Dad, next week I'll go overseas." He found a bird and she went to England, and he couldn't stay back, and he took off and he went to Europe. And I said, "Well, if you want to do that, I'm finished." And I did. I finished work, and then when he comes back and he was doing by himself, I helped him, you know, a little bit, but not much. Then 1997, 98, I had a heart problem, and I had to have an emergency operation, open heart surgery, and that was it.
Were you a smoker?
Yeah. I was a very heavy smoker. I never drink, but I never been drunk in my life, but very, very heavy smoker. I used to smoke up to 100 cigarettes a day. Then after that, 3 months after that, I had a problem with my stomach. Finished in the hospital, they cut 75 centimeters or more. Out, I was on a bag, you know, and they reconstructed my bladder, because my bladder was bad. And after that, I couldn't do it anyway. I couldn't do any hard work, any physical work. Then
Was it the physical work that did it? And the...
Well, I don't know, but could be a lot of worries and
right.
Cigarette.
You carry a lot of stress.
Part of the heart
yeah.
problems.
Yeah.
I don't know about the stomach, what causing that problem, I don't know.
Worries.
I had probably worries. I had always had a bed in a constipation, hard to go to the toilet.
That's hard.
Yeah.
A lot of stress.
Stress, it's all right, yeah. Mm. Then...
What were you stressed about?
I always being... they called me worry. I always being, not that negative thinking, but... once you get, bad luck or some problem, you start get, very uncomfortable, very, you don't...
So that business partnership, you mean, where your business partner...
First of all, that my partner, when he did that, that was one of the bad, thing, what really knocked me down. I went for more than years, very, very, had a very bad time. A lot of, a lot of debts and all that. I had to work hard to pay the back. And,
hard.
Yeah. And the young family, I had, two boys in the school. And a lot of, my wife, she couldn't work, she couldn't help me because she had to look after, she had a sick family. Her father, mother, and grandmother, she had to look after them. And she couldn't, when we got married, she never worked. She never went back to work because I didn't think we needed it because normally I earned pretty good money. I said, we can, survive with my, earning. You have to, you got two kids and family and all that. You haven't got the time for anything else. Then after all that, keep going, working hard, worries and this and that. When I got really to 98 heart problem, then 99. 3 months after, end of the 98, I had a surgery, and beginning of the 99, I had a stomach, operation, and it was 6 months complete,
Recuperating.
Bad, very bad, 6 months very bad.
Very serious.
Very serious. Then I recovered and we went a couple of times overseas, and we wasn't short of money, but I couldn't do any work. When I thought, because I was working hard all the time, 7 days a week, and when I retired, I was complete, bored, and I don't drink, I don't go anywhere, I don't gambling, I don't do anything. So I was lucky we had a farm here and was always something to do.
What about bowling? Because
I was very keen on a lawn bowl.
Tell me about when that started for you, and at Austral and then at the Bocce Club. Do you want to talk a bit about Austral?
I started in Austral 1971. I started in Austral because I had the idea of the Bocce, because we had a pitch back home. In Blato, we had a pitch, we had the balls and all that, everybody, weekend used to come, 20, 30 people there, we used to sell the wine and all that. And I was, as a kid, I was keen on those things.
So you had a bocce lawn at your house?
Not a lawn, like one at Leppington,
a
hair club. Alley, yeah, like that. And we was... Every weekend, we was, bashing those balls every weekend as a kid. Then when I come in Australia, I continue up to Green Valley. You know, we was on the Green Valley Road. We had a couple of pitch there. Then there on Leppington, and, you know, then we had the competitions, Rayon, and I was pretty, you know, pretty good, pretty keen on that. Then I joined a lawn ball in Austral. And didn't take me long, and I was one of the best in the club. After 12 months, I won a single, pairs, triple, fours, and everything. I was captain of the teams, and then in Austria, I spent 10 years in Austria, and I went 81 in Liverpool, because Austria always was, you know, more club. Liverpool was one of the biggest, strongest club in the Southern Metropolitan. Then I went there in Liverpool, and I was there also, you know, pretty good. And skip on number one pennants for a long, long time till I retired. I didn't retire till I got, you know, sick. And after that, I played, but I couldn't do that what I used to do. Then I got sort of ashamed of myself. I didn't want to see me somebody have what I was and what I now. So I said, I'll give up.
Oh, well, it's hard when you've been a champion.
Yeah, yeah. Then I give up. They begged me, they said, stay there. They said, you don't need it. Just stay in the team. You give the confidence of the other players. You know, they like to, you know, be with you, and they give you an achievement, you know. And I said, I'll try, then I tried very hard, and I couldn't. Then three and a half years ago, I got another big problem, lung problems. I had a big operation. They took the right lungs out, had a cancer on the lung, and that was it. I don't play a long ball. I couldn't do anymore, but I still play from time to time when I feel like down the club, yeah, club down there. One game, I can, you know, do one game, but it's hard for me because when I've been down, I start,
yes.
Then I get dizzy.
Yes.
Losing
oxygen.
Oxygen, and I start get dizzy. I said, before I felt, and I hit my head somewhere, I better sit down.
So what do you do these days? You're down the Bocce Club a few days a week. What does that mean to you, the Bocce Club?
I've been there like 30 something years. Leader of the club. For 32 years, I was the treasurer of the club. And same committee, like I was treasurer, Steve Bakarich was secretary, and Ivan Putar, he was president. That thing was for 30-something years. We never changed. Then after, when we all got, I got sick, and they older than me, and they gave it to somebody else, and they are youngest. Not much younger, but they're younger. But we're still going all. We're still all there. What else you got? As I said, never been drinker, never been gambler, never been for clubs or things like that. All of us like long balls because I didn't have a time working. I got a little bit of time weekend, I go play long balls or there on the club. That was it.
We're going to wind up soon because it's been... Is there anything else you want to talk about with your building or is there anything you want to cover that we haven't? Or add?
Not really.
When did you last go back home?
Last.
To Croatia?
6 years ago.
Do you think...
2005.
Do you think of Croatia as home or here as home?
I always think it's my home because I born there and I grew up there and everything there. But I've been away too many years. It's hard to, you know, Croatia can't, economic, far as economically, they can't compare to economic Australia. That's the main reason we're all here. That's the reason, my reason. Another, you know, I think a lot of, you know, misunderstanding far as politics, religion, and all that nonsense. You know, you don't feel comfortable there. And so that's another thing.
So just getting back to your building, you built the medical centre in the Green Valley housing estate. What were your impressions of that housing estate? Because it would have been the first. Did you have any feelings about the area? Like, what did you think about the area?
Well, it wasn't much area in Liverpool. If I go back, you know, on the...
I meant like Green Valley. You know, when you first go and look at the medical centre, there's this new housing estate.
It was quite a few new houses. Green Valley wasn't built yet. Wasn't built complete. That was 1962, when I started.
How did it look when you were building it?
Was all empty. That area there, flat area there, was all empty, all paddock. Only they had a shed, the police station there was, we found that there on the murder near the near a service station, I think it is, yeah. But they had a caravan or something. That was a police station, Green Valley Police Station, 1961, 62.
Why would they have had a police station there when there was no one there?
Oh, there was few houses.
Few houses. Like Stadlier.
Yeah, they start, new houses and a lot of young people there and... A lot of problems there too. A lot of problems.
Even then?
Oh, yeah. Those beginners there that start, you know, get very nasty and, you know, you couldn't leave anything out and was breaking houses and police was very busy.
The pub there? When did the pub get built? Was the pub there? Wasn't there yet? So, Green Valley started the housing estate being built, and you built the medical centre.
Medical centre, yeah.
I remember the medical centre. It was very important, the medical centre. Then you went to Mount Druitt and built Mount Druitt.
No. When I built the medical centre, I was contracting, full contract. When I finished medical centre, I went...
That's right.
Yeah. I called a closed company.
That's
not
right.
I didn't call myself a bankrupt, I just finished it.
That's right.
Without a bankruptcy. Then I went work a subcontract.
That's right.
Subcontract, we start in the Green Valley, up to here, near the
Miller, up Banks Road.
Almost near the tank, you know, up to Bunnering.
South Liverpool Road.
Yeah, someday, yeah.
Heckenberg.
Yeah. We built one street there. Then they opened Mount Druitt. And most building company wants to send good tribesmen to start, you know, do the project. And three teams of us, they had 27 teams, most building company, 27 teams of carpenters. And of those three teams, he sent us. One, it was very bad. Mandroid, Novoda, you know, all those, it was dairy farms. You smell flies everywhere. You're smelling, you know, cow manure and all things, dirt, rayon, and Novoda, and just the dirt roads and bad, and was very hot. And that day is my partner, Ivan. He finished. He couldn't take it anymore. And I continue. Then I come back in the Green Valley, there on the flat. We build the old age homes. I need the, you know, where the flats, those flats on the Houston Park Road, on the corner then.
Yes. Yeah, Houston Park Road, there's those flats.
Then you go, when you come from Liverpool. Yeah. I'm calling Liverpool, first one you ride,
there
go. Yeah, go up to the, you know, green side, Green Valley, and you go in that road. On the left-hand side is flats. On the right-hand side, before that water channel.
Yeah, I know where. Cabramatta
Avenue. Yeah. I built about 6 or 7 apartments, like old age. Only, you know, single story. And then we moved from there. I don't remember the road, but on the same day, they need the channel. We build all the way down to the almost to the park, you know, to the end to go opposite.
Banks Road.
Almost opposite. Catholic Club. You know, Catholic Club in...
Banks Road.
Yeah.
That big road. They've got farms there. Then there's that road that splits the housing estate and farm then.
Yeah, on that flat, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was there for about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
6 months and...
Aye.
Then from there, we went back to... That was last bit... What they built in Green Valley. Then we finished that, and we went back to Mandroid. And I stayed there in Mandroid to 71. A couple of years I stayed there. Then of 71 I finished with the Housing Commission, and I went to private.
Just getting back to Green Valley, do you remember the rubbish tip? Where the school is now?
Yeah.
Did you remember that?
Yeah.
As the rubbish tip?
Yeah.
Did you ever drop tip stuff there?
No. We never.
Because that's where the nuns built the school that I went to.
Uh-huh.
On the rubbish tip there. All right. Okay. We got that clear.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get that. So you've done quite a lot, really, haven't you?
Most of a bed.
Why did you marry your wife? What did you
think? When I come from Queensland, we formed a team, a soccer team. We called Dalmatinets. Liverpool, we had a showground. You know where there used to be showground, Liverpool? Opposite Whitlam. Opposite when it was the swimming pool.
Yes.
All those... units now, Bill.
Yes.
We had a ground there, and she had a, her father had a delicatessen shop in Liverpool. And her cousin, he was with me in Italy, in the camp. When I come from Queensland, and he talks to her cousin, he told her about me. Was I in Italy in the camp, and when I came down, I was living in Kookaburra Road. when we formed a team of the and her brothers and cousin, and they was with us. And she used to come, you know, from shop, and, you know, weekend when it closed the shop, they used to come down to watch, you know, how we were training or what, if we had a game, you know, a soccer game or things like that. And we met them, we talked a couple of times, and I went with the other girls and all that, but she always was there. We come together, and we was together for 6-7 years before we got married. Didn't it? You know, didn't it? Was rushing to marriage because I want to have a good time. Then we married, she fell pregnant and we had to get married, and she was, I don't know, we married on 3rd of March, and Anton born 17th of August.
That would have been a bit hard, wouldn't it? Because in those days it was a bit conservative. Was it okay? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right. So, what do you want to do? Finish now?
It's up to you. I think
I'll... I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. When did your mother die?
She died 75.
1975. And you have your brothers alive?
I was there, 75.
You were there when she died?
And I was there 72 for her, 75. Then my brothers get badly sick, he had cancer, and on the prostate, and he was suffering for a few years. Then I went there because I've been a couple of times, and I went there because they told me it wouldn't last another 15 days. Then I went there, I took him in a few different hospitals, different doctors. And everybody says that they're surprised, you know. The one specialist told me, he said he tricked us, all of us. He should be dead 6 months ago. And I asked him, how long he going to, because I can't stay here. I was there for 3-4 months. I said, I can't stay here. I had to work, you know. I had to work back in Australia. You tell me how long you think. He said, I can't tell you. Then he got a little bit better, and he got up, started walking around, and I said, no point to stay, you know. I have to go back. And I went back. 2 months after, I come back, and they told me, he's very bad, I thought, you know, I'm going to go back for funeral. They told me that he's gone. They ring me again. They said he's gone, and too late, and that was it. But after that, I went, you know, every couple of years. I think he was dying 87. He died 87. I was there 92, 95, 2000, 2003, 2004. Every few years, you know.
Are you going to go back, do you think?
Or? She wants to go back all the time, but I'm not
strong enough.
I'm not strong enough to do that. I don't know. I asked the doctor, and he says, I don't know how you take that. He says, flying such a long, you know, trip. A couple of times we went there, and after I had a bypass, we had a break. My son Anton was in Hong Kong. We went there 2 or 3 times and stayed a couple of weeks with him in Hong Kong. Then we go again, better, you know. Good, takes good breaks, and one we in Bangkok. We stopped in Bangkok and we got there for a few days, and that was great. But I don't know if I take it, can take it now, because I'm not very comfortable, special walking. You have to, if you're traveling, you have to do a lot of walking and things like that, and long time to sit in. I don't know.
All right.